In a world gone mad, only rationality and common sense can save it. It's Andrew and Jerry Save the World with your hosts, Andrew Langer and Jerry Rogers. And now, here's Andrew and Jerry.
Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome to this special bonus episode of Andrew and Jerry Save the World. I'm doing something a little differently. I realized that when I put together the day one episode of CPAC, I probably shouldn't have inserted the Horace Cooper and Roman Duravi interviews into both the video and audio files. I probably should have just done those as a separate bonus episode, like what we're doing now. So I decided to do that. Jerry and I did a pretty full episode on day two of CPAC. So if you haven't checked that out, go and check that out. This is a special bonus. My interviews, because Jerry hadn't shown up yet, with Doug Collins, former congressman from the great state of Georgia, as well as John Schweppe from the American Principles Project. Both interviews, a lot of fun to listen to. You're going to want to check those out. So thank you all very much. Well, then, I'm so glad to be joined by our guest. His name is Doug Collins. He is a former member of the United States Congress from Georgia.
Yes.
Yes. Which district in Georgia?
Ninth
congressional district. I am, as we're recording this, I am moderating a panel that he is going to be one of the participants on tomorrow morning main stage.
Yep.
Just before President Trump. So, Congressman, I've been talking about this issue, and I'll tee this up tomorrow as well to give you a good opportunity. The Biden administration is engaging in what I'm calling, my colleague Wayne Cruz, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, is calling the whole of government approach to regulation.
Yep.
That they have an ideological goal and they're using as many different agencies as possible to pursue that goal. So, for instance, right, we know they want prescription drug price controls. We would expect them to use HHS and the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Studies.
Right.
Now they're using the National Institutes for Standards and Technology, the folks who are in charge of the atomic clock. Talk about the march-in situation and Bayh-Dole and your thoughts on this.
Well, I think the biggest part, and I'm going to take it in a more general
form. Please do.
I think it's funny. The problem is you're seeing in Biden is the ideological fulfillment of the what I'll call the forthcoming of Obama. And if you go back even further a little bit to the underpinnings of Clinton, because you have the Democrats do this very well.
Right.
They have a one issue of saying, okay, we believe that government is the best and final way.
Right.
We believe that the more we have control of, the more we take away property rights, intellectual property, we're doing and taking those away, that we give from the big and give to the little.
Right.
Now, the problem, what we're seeing here is they do it underneath the cover of we're helping you. We're giving
you. Sure, yes.
So I think the big issue that I'm seeing with them right now, and when you take it from a whole of government approach, whether it be marching, whether it be these other issues, is that we've lost the understanding that there is a property value in thought. There's a property value in the design. There's a property value that we have gotten away from, because starting in kindergarten, if you think about it, what is the first thing that happens when you go to kindergarten?
You learned you're taught how to share.
Everybody. Oh, no. You brought your pencils today.
Yes.
Let's all put our pencils in the box.
Sure, yes.
Have one.
Wow.
So this starts way back in the whole thing.
You know, it's funny because when I used to be a property rights activist, you know, that was one of the things I would talk about is that one of the first things we as kids understand and learn is the concept of mine. This is my pencil. You know, this is my eraser. This is my cup of milk. But then they try to undo that at a very early age.
And it goes to the bigger picture.
Sure.
But here's the interesting part. And this is something that some people may be offended by. It's fine, whatever.
No, whatever.
But the Biden himself is not in control.
Right.
It is the underlying bureaucracy, which is sold out, been this way for their whole career.
Sure.
And so now they have a freedom. They're not worried about a chief executive coming down and saying, hey, what are you doing here? They're able to do it. And it's a continuation out of the Obama administration into this Biden administration, which he sold basically his political soul to the left to get in.
Right.
And so that's what's exactly happening. So now we're seeing unelected, unknown, unnamed bureaucrats who are now able to take this agenda and put it outside of Congress, which is inherently broken.
Right.
And so that's why they're doing it. And so we got to be very concerned about this, and we got to put it in ways that people understand, not just liberals bad, us good. It's got to be, here's how it's affecting you.
One of the things that I've been talking about, my role now as the director of the Center for Regulatory Freedom at CPAC,
is the issue of what happens if the Supreme Court overturns the Chevron doctrine, right? And had a conversation last week with a colleague over the Mercatus Center who rightly said, you know, in the same way that the conservative, the pro-life movement was not prepared for the Dobbs decision, we really, a movement, are not prepared for the post-Chevron world. You're, as a former member of Congress, you can speak to this. I got into this with a member years ago about whose fault it was that we had this massive growth in the regulatory state. I said, well, Congressman, part of it is you guys won't pass specific laws. Talk about Congress and whether or not it can really get better in a post-Chevron world.
We've actually abandoned. I mean, here's the problem I have right now is that when you look at Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, there's sort of distinct branches of government. Right. We have in Congress, and I say we because I was there, we've just simply abdicated our role.
Yes.
I go back to something most people would remember. If you remember when Nancy Pelosi took a beating because she said, we have to pass it.
Right.
The Senate.
Absolutely.
She wasn't lying.
Right.
Because in the bill, even if everybody had read every page, everything, it ended with to be determined by X, be determined. So this is what we're talking about, folks. So if you ever wonder what we're saying here about this doctrine in which we're giving deference to the executive branch, Congress has willingly gave that up.
Right.
And here's the part. Now you want to talk about not being ready for it.
Right.
If that is eliminated, then Congress is actually going to have to do a job in a much different way.
Absolutely.
And that means that you're going to have to do more committee hearings. You're going to have to do more, background work. You're going to have to do this stuff. And it actually means you're going to have to vote on stuff. So it is difficult.
How?
I think that's interesting.
Okay. So let me ask you this, because I think there's been a fundamental shift in staff up on Capitol Hill. Right. We had for many, many years, we had the good professional staffers who were subject matter experts. We don't really have that anymore, do we?
No, we don't. And I know staff, folks, members of Congress who have actually hired basically an office full of comms people.
Right.
And I'm sitting here saying, what are you going to do when you got to go and actually vote on a bill?
Sure.
I when I did my office, we had my first committee was judiciary. And that's what I became the ranking member of. And I had my legislative director, who is your head legislative person. That was their committee. They knew everything about it. They dug into it. They did issues. And then my other legislative assistants dealt with the policies and others.
Sure.
We don't have that anymore. So you've got members. Wow. You've got members who do not understand the bills that they're actually giving. One of the worst things that ever happened, funniest things. I was on rules.
Funny and worst. They could be the same thing. Yes.
I was on rules committee.
Okay.
Which is, you know, powerful. It gets to the floor.
Sure.
And I was put on there. And I brought up one time that we have an understanding that if you want to submit an amendment, you can just submit it.
Sure.
You don't have to come talk about it. And we can either include it or not include it. And I brought it up with Pete Sessions, who was the chairman one day. I said, Mr. Sessions, I said, Mr. Chairman, I want to make a motion that if you do not come and present your amendment, we do not consider it.
Sure.
And you would have thought that I was the devil incarnate.
Oh, my God. God forbid.
I wanted them to come before committee. And if I submitted a bill, you had to give testimony about your bill.
Love it.
Most people never do that. They don't even know their bills.
Yes. I mean, this, and it's so funny because literally, and it's not just Congress, because literally a producer at a radio station I used to work for tweeted out about that very issue this morning in Maryland. He said, I don't understand legislators who introduce bills who don't know what's in their bill.
No, I had I do travel the country.
Yeah, so of course.
I'm going to leave it very open.
Sure.
A member in a certain legislative body introduced a bill and it happened to overflow into another member's bill. When the other member confronted them about that, they said, well, I only dropped it because, and they named the lobbyist name.
Oh, boy.
That's me to drop it.
See, there you go. See, this is.
I'm not saying he bought it, but it's easy. Hey, this sounds good. Well, yeah, it sounds good. I'll just introduce it.
You know, it's one of those things. Now, listen, I'm not a big fan of the movie The American President, right? It's the same way that the West Wing is a leftist view of their ideal world, anyway. But there is one nugget in there that is right, which is that this is hard.
Oh, you know, it's hard. Governance is hard.
I mean, whether or not you want to call it democracy or whether or not you want to call it republic, it's hard. And there are too many people who don't want to do the hard work anymore.
They don't.
Yeah.
Look, legislating is not doing this.
Right.
Legislating is not going on Newsmax. It's not going on Fox. It's not doing it. That is over and above.
Right.
Legislating is actually getting it. And this is what I've shared this story so many times. And in fact, if I ever went back to Congress, I'm sort of sad to say this, because if people actually understand this, Congress will be different. But if most members, and I know people are going to say this, are bored.
Right.
they're a personality for the most part. Some are not, but their staff definitely is.
Right.
And so they're not, if they don't have an idea of what to tell their staff to work on, then everybody just sort of sits around doing this number.
Again, I tend to quote and reference movies a lot. There was a movie Robert Redford did called The Candidate.
Oh, I love The Candidate. Right?
And at the end,
mandatory watching.
They win, and he says, so what now? What do we do now?
What's next?
I mean, it's the issue. Again, coming back to what we're going to do in the post Chevron world.
It is, because we don't know.
Yeah.
If you're no longer giving deference to a committee, an agency's interpretation, and then you look at the bill has no interpretation.
Right.
And I understand, you know, look, I disagree with it because I pass the bills, I carry bills at Chevron, but I have to, in all honesty, side with Justice Roberts and others and say, okay, there's a problem.
Right. Here. Absolutely.
We're going to unleash chaos. What was the ruling recently? They said, if we did this, it's unleashing chaos.
Sure. Yes.
But sometimes I think they're going to have to unleash chaos to get us back in balance.
It's a situation in which, we can't just sort of go along to get along simply because it's the easy thing to do. We can't do that anymore.
We have become a system, whether we like it or not, and this is for people out there, if you actually read more than just, you know, what you want to hear, America is more of a quasi-parliamentary system than we let on.
Right.
Because we have, in the legislative bodies, have basically ceded power to the executive. And if it's our executive, we like them. If it's not our executive, we don't like them.
Sure.
So it's sort of like almost just a parliamentary system in which we have the coalitions and this coalition, except our problem is, we don't understand how to do that, so we've been fractured. And Republicans are very bad at it.
You know, let me add one more thing to this mix, which is, because you said this, you know, most of the staff is now nominally, right? We don't call them that, but the comms people. Something has changed now that every member can have a direct access to nationwide press.
You know, used to be
that's changed the whole what's the word I'm looking for? The incentives.
Talk
a little bit about that.
Yeah, look, I think two things changed.
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich was part of the original change that made Washington the enemy, and rightfully so in what he was saying. But yet what he did was also send members home.
Yeah.
Okay. And you may, or if you're listening to this podcast and you understand something, I want you to understand that when members know each other, and maybe I'll take it to a personal level.
Sure.
If you have a friend that you're mad at, and I tell you to pray for that friend, it's harder to be mad at that friend.
Absolutely. 100%.
Okay, so if I know my opponent across the table, and I used to do a lot of work with Hakeem Jeffries and others, disagreed completely, but we had a respect to say, where can we get things done?
Right.
By sending everybody home, they never gained those experiences.
Sure.
You never know the other party. Number two came in, 24-hour news service.
Yeah.
Then number three was social media.
Sure.
I'll use an example. I had a gentleman call in my office one day, irate. I knew this guy. We've been around. He was irate. How could Joe Congressman, why is he not done? And he was talking about a bill that we hadn't co-sponsored.
Yeah.
And I said, what in the crap? I said, I called him up and I said, who is the bill? And I went back and he said, well, it's so-and-so did it. I went back to my staff and I said, find this bill. They called up and that we called the office of the member that they were talking about. And he said, we haven't introduced it yet. We talked about it. I called him back and chewed on him.
Sure.
Said, quit calling my staff and wasting their time on something that's not even
a thing yet. Yes. I understand.
But that's what's effect.
Well, listen, I know you got to go. I appreciate you sitting down. Looking forward to sitting down with you tomorrow. And I got to get you for a long form interview in the next few weeks.
We'll do that.
Thank you so much. Take care. Well, I'm so glad to be joined right now by John Schweppe. He is the policy director for the American Principles Project. John.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
How many, is this your first CPAC?
Actually my 10th.
Okay, there you go. You know something? We ought to have. I'm gonna tell the folks at CPAC. We should have a way of honoring you. Should get like a little pin
like
for
a
that.
Golden,
yes,
golden badge.
So
or
this
something.
Is for me, not to play the one-upmanship game, but this is my 20th. I think.
I think we
figured it out. You know, not in a row, which I think makes it worse.
Yeah.
But 20 of these things. So talk to us a little bit about American Principles Project.
So we bill ourselves as the NRA for the family.
Nice.
So we're a social conservative group, but we
engage
in campaigns and elections. We spent about $15 million last cycle in the 2022 cycle, hoping to up that this cycle because it's a pretty important election. And, we really focus on fighting the left on a lot of these issues where they're really going after us. And then also, fighting for the interest of the families on issues like economics.
You know, it's interesting because I'm doing regulatory work for CPAC now, and we dealt with a situation over the summer where they were talking about increasing the childcare subsidy. And we filed comments pointing out that this was in fact going to make childcare more expensive. Right. But you're talking about some tax credit issues. Talk about these things.
Yeah, well, we look at Donald Trump. One of his best accomplishments was passing the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And, families really appreciated the bump in the child tax credit from $1,000 to $2,000.
Very nice.
And so, there's talk right now in Congress about extending that.
Good.
We think it's good policy. It got out of the House. And so our hope is that the Senate will take it up and not mess with it too much and get it passed.
Well, we ought to be finding ways to encourage people to have families. We ought to be rewarding them for doing it. Right. And certainly I always like any situation in which it encourages families to be able to pay fewer taxes. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. Lowering taxes on families is good. And then to your point, you brought up some of the childcare stuff where the Biden administration is really trying to take over parenting, right? Government takeover of parenting. And this is about empowering families and giving them the ability to make those decisions themselves.
So what else is on your radar screen? What all is going on with you guys?
We're also focused on, age verification in the States. I don't know if you've heard about these bills, but I have my little porn shirt on.
Quentin sure. Warren. Okay.
And we're trying to protect kids from online porn. We got 8 states that have passed age verification legislation. Going to get that up to 20 this year, I think.
Okay.
And trying to, really make a push.
It's a situation where at the very least, we need to make sure that parents are really cognizant of what their kids are doing online. Had a conversation with somebody yesterday where they were talking about sort of the march over time as to how they were dealing with their kids and the internet. With phones and all of that, but also making sure like computers are in the open.
Right.
For us, it was always, my kids always knew that we could demand your phone or computer at any point in time. These are important steps, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, things have changed a lot. I'm 36.
Okay.
So when I was a kid, we had, as you said, one computer in the living room. Pretty hard for me to access pornography, just to be honest. Now devices are everywhere. Kids have them. Even if they go to the playground, other kids have cell phones, right? And so they're able to access this stuff. We actually saw a study recently that the average age of first exposure to pornography is now 11, Jesus. 11 years old. Wow. So we really got to move on this. And I think it's good that state legislatures are acting. And we're hoping that the federal government can act too. This should be a place where there's bipartisan agreement.
There needs to be a discussion about this and about, the issues of how we're dealing with our kids and age of majority and all of those other things. These are very important topics, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, good. Well, how do folks find out more about the good work you guys are doing in the American Principles Project?
We are at AmericanPrinciplesProject.org, and we post a lot on Twitter, as all the kids do these days. So we are at AP Project on Twitter.
But you don't need to have your age verified in order to
see
what you guys are doing.
There's some effort.
That's a good thing. Well, John, thank you so very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right.
Well, I hope you enjoyed those two interviews. I don't say this very often. If you're liking what you hear on Andrew and Jerry Save the World, please subscribe on whatever podcast platforms you're listening to. Or if you're watching us on YouTube, subscribe there. Mash down on the like button. Leave a review. Let your friends know. Let your family members know. Let your family members, friends, and your friends' family members all know about Andrew and Jerry Save the World. As Jerry always says, find the truth, plant your feet, and stand firm. And as I always say, have a great week, everybody. Have fun, and please stay safe.